I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 24th of March. Milwaukee Public Schools is having a community conversation about public education and how proposed legislative action could have an impact on Milwaukee Public Schools. As we all know, education reform ideas are moving through the Wisconsin legislature. We did a program a little while ago about low-achieving public schools being taken under the control of the state or handed over to charter school operators to improve performance. We spoke with a recovery school district official in Tennessee who said the program is very successful. The same thing, except on a larger scale, took place in New Orleans. It started before Hurricane Katrina, but it has been in full force since Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans. We're going to have three guests with us who will also be in Milwaukee on Thursday and Friday of this week, talking about what happened in New Orleans and what is the best way to educate students in primarily poor and minority districts like New Orleans, like Milwaukee. We'll be welcoming phone calls for all three of our guests. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Professor Renard Sanders, one of our guests, has been in the educational field for over 35 years in teaching, educational administration, economic and community development. He served as professor and director in the Master of Arts in Urban Education program at Southern University in New Orleans and executive director of the National Faculty at New Orleans, designed to improve the quality of teaching in poor performing schools throughout the Mississippi Delta. He also has a radio program. Professor Sanders, we thank you very much for joining us this hour. Hello.
Inviting me.
Yeah, our pleasure. Also joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah, we also have with us a Professor Chris Burris, who received her doctorate from UW-Madison, is author of Charter Schools, Race and Urban Space, Where the Market Meets Grassroots Resistance. And that book chronicles the past decade of education reform in New Orleans. She is co-founder and director of the New Orleans-based Urban South Grassroots Research Collective for Public Education. She is a professor in the Department of Educational Policy Studies at Georgia State University in Atlanta. Professor Burris, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Yeah, our great pleasure to have you with us. And Karen Harper Royal works as an education advocate in New Orleans and assistant director of Pyramid Community Parent Resource Center. She has been for a long time an advocate for students with disabilities, has served on the National Board of Children and Adults with Attention Deficit Disorder. Post-Katrina, she served on the Recovery School District Advisory Committee. She has two sons who are graduates of New Orleans Public Schools. Karen, thank you very much for being with us as well.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, our great pleasure. Let's start with you. Let's start with Professor Sanders on this. What happened in New Orleans after Katrina when it came to the school system? The schools, I understand it, were closed. There was no school as people were trying to get the city rebuilt. Was it pretty much immediately that charter operators took over the public schools?
Well, no, it wasn't exactly immediately, but while we were still underwater and when many bodies had not recovered, unbeknownst to many of us here, there was a national agenda that was being laid out from New Orleans. That was determined in a meeting about 8 days after Hurricane Katrina. And it was basically crafted by the Heritage Foundation, which is a conservative thinking tank group in Washington, D.C., and they laid out about a 10-item agenda for New Orleans, which Congress followed, which basically was to dismantle public education and start voucher or charter schools. They specifically mentioned charter schools and put it on and to privatize New Orleans. At that particular time, we did not know exactly that meeting had occurred, but meanwhile, we were getting some very, very strange messages from the State Department of Education not to reopen schools, that he wasn't given any money to reopen schools in New Orleans immediately after Katrina. Meanwhile, he was giving money to neighboring parishes that had much more damage than we had in New Orleans, and I know that's kind of hard to believe, but had much more damage. They were allowed to open schools, and we were not allowed to open schools. He tried to do some things in terms of getting rid of the local school superintendent. When that failed, they crafted some discriminatory legislation that basically took over the schools in New Orleans and put them in the recovery school district, which has been a disaster since he did that. So it kind of happened over a 60-day period. And it wasn't until sometimes afterwards, as you know, as the world knows, you know, we went through a lot of devastation that mm-hmm. we really understood that this was a national kind of movement, and to make this the 21st century city, and that is to privatize public education and to do the kinds of things that have happened in New Orleans, which I'm sure, you know, we'll talk about on this program, which is not the national narrative. And the national narrative is that everything is going fine, you know, everybody's happy, we've improved, but the realities is that it has been, you know, a totally opposite. So in answer to your question, it happened over a 60-day period with most of the city depopulated, no one here to really fight it, and the legislation that was passed to take over the schools was very discriminatory in that we were put under standards that no other parish, we have parishes in Louisiana,
yes,
had to go to just to take over the schools in New Orleans. So it was well conceived and well crafted, much to the detriment of the children in New Orleans.
Karen Harbor Royal is a parent who has had two sons in New Orleans public schools and has been working with students with disabilities. I've seen some video, Karen, students, a school that had to close recently in New Orleans because of the way that it was treating, and I don't know the details, students with disabilities. From the takeover, from your perspective, working with these kinds of students, have there been special programs for students who have special needs? Are all of the charter schools required to take students who have special needs?
Charter schools are required to take students who have special needs, but how they have done that and the problems over the last 9 years that have resulted from charter schools basically not being up to speed, many of them, in how they serve children with special needs. Some charter schools have discouraged parents from enrolling in their schools by saying, well, we don't have a teacher for a child with autism. I had a charter CEO say to me about 5 or 6 years ago, do you know what it would do to my budget to hire a teacher just for that child? He was speaking of a child with autism. And indeed, the Southern Poverty Law Center has filed, in 2010, filed a lawsuit kind of enumerating many of the problems that I had been encountering with the parents I support. And that lawsuit has just been, they've just gotten to a consent decree with that lawsuit. However, you are correct, there is a charter school that is being shut down, supposedly due to these special needs violations. But those of us who work in special ed understand that there have been special needs violations in schools from the beginning of time, and certainly they have been exacerbated by the landscape of public education here in New Orleans post-Katrina. The state has been aware of these special education violations in many of their schools, but I personally believe that this school is being used as a scapegoat to now say, see how tough we are on special ed violations? We're going to close this school
mm-hmm.
down.
Mm-hmm.
But at the very same time, there are other schools with very similar special special ed violations.
We're going to get you on a better phone line. I think that you and one person we haven't even heard from yet, Professor Chris Burris, are on a conference arrangement. We're going to get both of you on separate phone lines so that it will be crystal clear. So I'm not ignoring you. We're just going to call you back. Professor Sanders, when the school district, when Katrina happened and the school district literally was dismantled, what happened to all of the teachers who were part of New Orleans Public Schools? Did they then get hired by charter schools?
No. In actuality, they eventually were fired after about 3 months going back and forth to court. And what happened, and I'm very glad that you asked that question. What happened was about 13 days after the storm, the state superintendent wrote Margaret Spelling, who at that time was the Secretary of Education, and asked her for funds to help with the public education to the parishes that were affected by Katrina. In that request, he asked for money to take care of teacher salaries because these parishes could not pay any money and keep them on the keep the insurance going, and related it to a similar situation that the federal government had done to Florida some years earlier. He got around $756 million over a nine-month period and basically did not give any of that money to the all these parish schools. Matter of fact, he told them he wasn't going to open schools and did not open schools till about 3 months after we had hundreds of kids running the street. But he did give monies to the other parishes, and he used that money to maintain their teaching force. Meanwhile, Orleans Parish didn't have any schools. He was threatening not to give any money, so they fired the teachers. When the Recovery School District reopened with the schools that Orleans Parish had, they did not want to hire those teachers. And they told them they all had to take a test, and they basically told them that they didn't want them. They used the money that the state superintendent requested from the federal government and advertised nationally and got teachers from all over the country, gave them bonuses, gave them housing allowances, while the teachers in New Orleans had been fired and still struggling. And those teachers eventually lost their jobs, and they are in litigation regarding that right now. So that was another, you know, great travesty, because we lost about 7,500, middle class,
yes,
jobs that were just gone, and they were just gone out the window.
Which was important for the tax base, I'm sure, of New Orleans.
Well, what it did was, I don't know, we're a very poor city here.
Yes.
And I don't know any city in America that, has much more, has a larger medium income than us, that would lose 7,500 very livable wage jobs and not say anything about it. So the political leadership statewide and locally, other than a few voices, were really silent. Now, I do need to tell you, of those 7,500 employees, which included social workers, school bus drivers, counselors, custodians, and maintenance personnel, of those teachers, most of them were African-American. So the African-American community, really, the middle class, really took a hit, because we lost around 5,500 jobs. And in the aftermath, most of these charter schools, they're not hiring those people. So they're looking for these overnight alternative certification programs, Teach for America, which has not fared well for our kids, and hired them at a much lower cost. Meanwhile, those jobs are really not available to any local African-Americans anymore. And it is not unusual to have a school in New Orleans that has an all-black student population with an all-white staff in this privatization market-based model that we're in now.
Mm-hmm. What are parents thinking about all of this, Karen? Do you find that people are accepting the situation, that there are some charter schools that are innovative and good, and people are saying, all right, this is a good model? Is there a lot of disappointment and people asking for a change to more of a public school system?
Parents are very frustrated with this system. Although there may be some parents who like their particular charter school, it's there. Many parents do not like having to hunt for a school from year to year. In the case of these schools that are now closing for various reasons, parents are frustrated that they now have to jump back into the hunt, especially in the case of this Lanyap charter school that's going to be closing at the end of this school year due to those special ed violations. Parents of children with special needs are extremely frustrated with this because they are often pushed away from their schools, are told that if you don't like the way it is at this school, you have school choice, choose another school. So there is a growing sense of frustration. In fact, there's a new parent group that's being formed right as we speak called Upset, because they are upset about some of the things that are going on. They are now beginning to recognize that their children are being used as commodities in a portfolio approach to public education.
We had to get you on a better phone line. Renard was talking about how so many African-American teachers lost their jobs, and we had Teach for America and other people who were certified in a very quick fashion to teach in these schools. Are you looking at a situation now where you have a predominantly African-American school children and you have predominantly white teaching staff?
You see that in a lot of the charter schools, especially the ones that were started by people who are not from New Orleans, where the CEO or the school's founder wasn't from New Orleans, although they would come in and get a few people from the community to serve on the charter board, but those are not the people who came up with the idea. So with some of these kind of charter schools, you do see predominantly white teaching staff with predominantly African-American children. You absolutely see that.
And what about the quality of teaching? If so many certified teachers were let go, and you do you notice a different quality of instruction or not?
I see a different quality of instruction. Since I've been a public school parent for the last 23 years, and I know the kind of quality education my children got, how deep they go into the curriculum, where kids were taught in a way to love learning, I see children basically being prepared to pass tests. It's not the same kind of well-rounded quality education that I receive or my children. We all have used the public schools in New Orleans. And I see a difference. Personally, if I had a five-year-old today, I could never put my child in one of these recovery school district charter schools, because I would not want my child subjected to the kind of test prep mentality that is what education has become in many of these recovery school district charter schools. Understand, Louisiana has six different types of charter schools. The recovery school district charter schools are the Type 5 charter schools that were created with the big takeover and right after Hurricane Katrina. Even though Type 5 charter schools actually were created in 2003, the bulk of them came into the recovery school district after the hurricane in 2005. And I would never, ever choose one of these schools for my child.
Mm-hmm. Well, what would you do?
I would do what I had to do, which is we don't have neighborhood schools in New Orleans anymore, so you have to choose a school. And my son, when we came back from the hurricane, he went back to the school, which was a magnet school before. It became a charter school after Katrina, but it's not a recovery school district charter school. He went back to his same school. However, when he was in 11th grade in 2013, his charter school decided that, well, you know, your GPA has fallen below a 2.0. You need to go find another school. So I was faced with having to choose another school. I looked around. There was nowhere for him to go. I would have had to accept a placement at a school that nobody else chose. That would be the only school that had seats. The better charter schools that are not a part of the recovery school district, I had already missed their application process, so the only schools that were available to me were the recovery school district charter schools. And the recovery school district direct run schools, they only had a couple of them at that time, and those were totally unacceptable to me. So I had to fight to make sure he could stay at that school, that he, the only school he had ever attended in New Orleans, and he did stay there and graduated last May. But this is the this is my point exactly. They say that they've expanded parent choice. Here I am, a parent who has utilized parent choice over the last 23 years. When I needed parent choice in 2013, I did not find that this market gave me the offerings and the accessibility that I desperately needed in June of 2013.
Mm-hmm. And what are the problems, Professor Sanders, with transportation? Is there money available for busing students to wherever these schools may be? If there aren't any neighborhood schools anymore, how do you get to school?
Well, I think that's part of the flaws with the public education, with this market reform system. And, the way that it works in Louisiana is that a school district gets money, a school gets money per pupil by, you know, per pupil enrollment, and they are to provide transportation for any child that lives outside a radius, I think, of 1 mile from the school. The approach that the Recovery School District has encouraged and promotes, and that many of these charter schools follow, is to not have any neighborhood schools. So out of the limited funds that they are getting from the state, they are paying for transportation, and kids are riding on buses up to 3 hours a day to and from school.
3 hours?
Dozens of schools. Yep.
Ooh.
Uh-huh. And we have some five-year-olds that are getting up at 5:30 in the morning and coming home at 4:30 and 5:30 in the afternoon. So the transportation budget, pre-Katrina, we had 123 schools. We were spending $13.4 million on transportation. Post-Katrina, we have about 70 schools, and we're spending $35 million. So the cost has gone off the roof. But what really makes it really insidious and really worse than just the act of putting your five-year-old on a bus for an hour and a half in the morning and an hour and a half in the afternoon is the fact that most of these schools in the Recovery School District are DNF-rated schools. So they are claiming about school choice, and their kids are riding across town, maybe leaving a school that was closed because they said it failed, and they're taking them to other DNF schools. So that is really frustrating the parents, waste of resources, and those resources certainly could be used to do something else. But in New Orleans, I think, and I think this is one thing Milwaukee needs to understand, that the whole premise behind the reforms in New Orleans that they're asking, you know, that they're saying is the national model, is that the charter operator has unquestionable autonomy. So these charter operators basically, by and large, want to select kids, right? And they want to go through this selection process and put up barriers for kids, either by admission requirements or conditions on admission. And they don't want to take any neighborhood kids. So by them wanting this right to do that, it puts an unfair burden on a parent that, and an unfair burden on a 5 or 6 year old. And I think that, the numbers indicate, from $13 million to $35 million, and we've got like 50 less schools, and they really relish in the fact and don't want to do neighborhood schools. When a recommendation was made to our state education board that, let's move to neighborhood schools, and a lot of parents wanted it, the Louisiana Charter Association lobbied against it. And our state board said, no, they don't have to take neighborhood kids.
Mm.
So, each school can do that individually. I think we only have 2 schools that are taking neighborhood kids. But they are situated in a predominantly white upper-class neighborhood. So if you are poor and if you're an African-American and if you don't have any wherewithal to get into the few schools that they have that are doing well, you are invariably suffering every day, putting your child on the bus, and you can very well have 2 or 3 children going to 2 or 3 different schools.
We welcome phone calls for our guests. Joining us, the first part of the program, and we'll be meeting Professor Chris Burris in just one moment. It was just hard to coordinate three people with the phones here. So we're speaking with Professor Renard Sanders. He's been in teaching, educational administration, economic and community development for a number of years in New Orleans, served as professor and director in the Master of Arts in Urban Education program at Southern University in New Orleans. Also joining us is Karen Harper Royal, who works as an education advocate in New Orleans and assistant director of Pyramid Community Parent Resource Center. She maneuvered the charter schools and public schools for her two sons, who are graduates of New Orleans schools, and she is an advocate for students with disabilities. We're doing this program because these two and our third guest, who we'll meet momentarily, are going to be in Milwaukee this coming Thursday and Friday. As you know, there has been some talk, although it hasn't happened much recently, but in the past year and a half, there has been talk and some conferences and visits by people in Milwaukee to places like Tennessee, where there are recovery districts. There has been conversation about the lowest performing schools in Milwaukee removed from the district's authority and placed in a state-run district, which could turn them over to charter school operators or give them flexibility to make staffing changes, leadership changes, and we don't know when that will be discussed more fully in the legislature, but it will at some point. So our guests are meeting Thursday at the Milwaukee High School of the Arts at 4:30 and Friday from 6 o'clock onward at Park Lawn Assembly of God to talk about what we're talking about this hour. What do you think about the idea? It's interesting to hear about what's going on in the city of New Orleans. Would this, obviously, from what we've heard, this may not be the kind of model that you want to see for MPS. Do you have worries about this? We did hear from people in Tennessee some months ago who said that a recovery district there seems to be working just fine. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. And we thank Karen for being with us. We're going to make way for Dr. Kristen Burris, Professor Burris, Associate Professor in Educational Policy Studies at Georgia State University. And she's written a book about education reform. Spent about 10 years, actually, on this. It's Charter Schools, Race, and Urban Space, Where the Market Meets Grassroots Resistance. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the what's happened in New Orleans with this recovery school district, and the schools don't seem to be any better. There are young children who, because of no neighborhood schools, are on the buses for a long, long period of time to go to charter schools. There's a question of accountability for these charter schools, and some of them have closed. So what happens when a school closes? How do you maneuver as a parent your way through all of this? And is this a model for other places like Milwaukee? All three of our guests will be in Milwaukee, as I said, on Thursday and Friday of this week. And let's introduce Professor Chris Burris. I already gave you her bio, but she spent a number of years investigating the new recovery district in New Orleans, and she's with us now. Professor Burris, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks so much.
10 years investigating what's going on in New Orleans. That's a lot of investigation.
It definitely is.
From what we've heard from the last 35 minutes, it sounds to me as though there are a lot of children getting on buses for way too long a period of time at very young ages, that parents are somewhat up in the air as to where their children can go to school, who will take children, that the school district has become run by white people for an African-American school-based population. African-American teachers who used to be in the public schools are gone. What else do you want to report? Is there any good news here?
Well, you know, I was going to say, I was listening to the comments that Renard and Karen were making. I mean, I'm in complete agreement with everything they've said so far. But using the, you mentioned the busing, right, the transportation, and Dr. Sanders mentioned the tripling of the transportation costs. To me, that is emblematic of what's happening in New Orleans around the charter school reform, because this boils down to race and it boils down to money. and to speak in a very forthright way, it boils down to a relatively large group of largely white entrepreneurs, as I call them, coming into a largely African-American public school system and turning it into a business for their own profitability, if you will. And so it's, you know, who wouldn't want to run a bus company in New Orleans, right? You're making a fortune. And there are all kinds of other ways that that the charter schools in New Orleans have basically turned black children into a means for making money. You know, there's an infamous example in New Orleans where a charter school network called Future Is Now took over a longstanding historic high school called John McDonough and basically developed a very bloated administrative structure in which principals and various other sort of administrators were making anywhere from $115,000 to $250,000. Mind you, while these administrators were being paid executive six-figure salaries on a scale of 150, right, for school performance scores, the school was ranking a 9. A 9 on a scale of 150. And so this is what we see, is that what seems to come last is the well-being of African-American children, and what seems to come first is the financial interests of a largely white class of entrepreneurs. It's the same thing that Karen mentioned with special ed, right? You know, the Southern Poverty Law Center lawsuit that was mentioned, which represented a class of some 4,500 disabled kids who asserted that the charter schools in New Orleans either patently refused to admit them or, upon admission, failed to give them federally mandated services. Again, it comes down to money. It's expensive to provide special education. Many of the charter schools in New Orleans are parts of larger networks, but many are also individual charter schools, and so they can't sort of leverage an economy of scale, if you will, to hire a special education staff, and so they simply opt to not serve them or counsel kids out or to admit them but not serve them well, as they should, because it comes down to money. It's expensive. So it's all about cost containment, even while simultaneously the rhetoric is about, you know, presumably serving and honoring the civil rights of these children.
Isn't there a state mandate that you have to teach all children equally?
Well, there is. I mean, there are, you know, state and federal laws that indicate this. You know, and in the case of special ed kids, that they should be given, you know, free access to a free and appropriate education in the least restrictive environment. But the issue is that those regulations and many others are simply thrown out of the window. You know, much of the charter school movement has advanced on the rhetoric of autonomy for accountability, right? So charter schools are supposed to have more freedoms and more autonomy to operate in the way that they think will serve kids well. But in exchange, the state is supposed to, hold them to a higher accountability standard. You know, the reality is just the opposite. You know, report after report has come out of Louisiana State Auditor's Office that has shown that essentially, you know, charter schools are only audited for financial and contractual compliance when they come up for contract renewal. And so a number of things can be happening that and are happening that go sort of unmonitored by the state as a result of this.
Who are these charter operators? Where do they come from?
Well, some of them are sort of national operators, like the Knowledge is Power program, right? You know, and again, if you look at the rhetoric, right, is about that charter schools are going to bring innovation and new curriculum,
yes,
new ideas to sort of a stilted public education system. But if you look at the Knowledge is Power program, which is a national network, their curriculum model, in my view and the view of many others, is just the opposite of innovation. In fact, it's extremely regimented and disciplinary. The kids are expected to sort of walk in certain ways. They can't speak in at various times in the classroom. They have to interact. There are a lot of chanting and hand clapping to sort of regiment the day. And in fact, not against KIPP, but another network called Collegiate Academies in New Orleans, who also adopts what is called the No Excuses Charter School model, actually recently had a civil rights complaint filed against it by a parent group because there were concerns that this harsh and disciplinary culture advocated by many of these charter school networks actually served to violate kids' civil rights. And so some of the networks are national, some are local, but you'd be surprised at the similarity across them in that the vast majority of them are not bringing innovation. They're bringing sort of regimented, test-driven discipline to the schools. And what has been wiped out by much of this is what Ms. Harper Royal alluded to, which is the indigenous knowledge of black veteran teachers, people who know the culture and history of the community, and who taught in ways that were very culturally relevant to the students, despite a lack of economic resources in the schools for decades, really for more than a century. You know, much of that has been replaced by these networks basically recruiting inexperienced teachers from out of town on the cheap who stay a year, maybe two, maybe three, but that's highly unlikely. You know, don't expect pensions or health insurance and so forth, and then they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
Or perhaps they spend a year in the classroom and then they move up to be the principal of a school or to maybe start a charter school network. Some of them move very quickly through the charter school leadership pipeline. But all of this has been sort of premised on an attack on black veteran educators in the city. And so, again, you have sort of these stark racial and class-based contrasts between the system that was and the system that is.
Professor Sanders, is there any local control over all of this? Are there regular meetings of a local school board? Is there a local school board? Are there parents who go?
Well, about 90% of the schools in New Orleans operate under the Recovery School District, and they report to the state board.
I see.
So for most of the schools and parents who have problems, they have to appeal to a board that meets on a Tuesday or Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. They have one or two meetings in New Orleans, usually a subcommittee meeting. So there is no contact with the local board, and access to that board is terrible. I do need to say, and, you know, the New Orleans story can be very, very complicated. The Orleans Parish School Board, the duly elected board, still does exist, and they maintain about 17 or 18 schools. 12 of them are charters, and they kept the well-performing schools. And when I say well-performing schools, those schools that were above the state average, which is a result of that discriminatory legislation called Act 35. So there are some direct-run schools by the duly elected board that are doing quite well, I might say, and that they don't get any publicity, and they're run with from a centralized. Government process, as most other school districts across the country are. But for the majority of the parents in New Orleans, they have no local representation. These charter boards, sometimes they won't meet with them, or they'll tell them, we'll meet with you later. And if they're dissatisfied with their charter board, then their appeal is to the state board. And there has not been, to my knowledge, and I think Karen can concur, that there has not been any appeal that parents have made to that state board that have overruled the decisions of these local charters. So these local charters are given unquestionable accountability, and it is really they're not held accountable for anything. So they do exactly what they want, violates kids' rights in terms of special needs, violate discipline code, do all kinds of things, and no one tells them anything. So this is really a free market in the raw, so to speak.
We welcome phone calls for our guests. I know there hasn't been much time. We've had a lot of guests and a lot to discuss here. All three of the people we've been speaking with this hour will be at a community conversation about public education and how proposed legislative action could impact Milwaukee. As you know, there is talk in Wisconsin about a recovery school district for low-performing MPS schools, and we are looking at a model that, should it happen, might not be the best kind of model for Milwaukee if we're looking at New Orleans. We talked with people in Tennessee a while ago who said that the district is working very well. In New Orleans, charters took over after Hurricane Katrina, after schools were closed for some months, and it would indicate that the school system is having more than a few problems. So we're hearing about what those are this hour of the program. Joining us, Dr. Renard Sanders, who has been a teacher, educational administrator, economic community developer, for a former high school principal, who is joining us by phone today. He will be at the community forum. And Professor Kristen Burris, who is in educational policy studies at Georgia State University. And she spent 10 years looking at what happened to New Orleans schools. The book, the result of those years of study, Charter Schools, Race, and Urban Space, Where the Market Meets Grassroots Resistance. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. If you'd like to join us, we would be okay with that. We'd like to hear from you. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Phone number for you to join our on-the-air conversation is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. We spoke with people in Tennessee some months ago about a recovery district in that state. Have there been a lot of people who have come to New Orleans to look at what's going on there and use it as a model for recovery districts in other states, or has it been so unsuccessful that people tend not to stop in New Orleans? Chris?
Yeah, I think that's a key question. There have been multiple, countless reports, actually, that have come out since 2005 that have lauded the grand success and miracle of sort of charter school reform in New Orleans. The Heritage Foundation has put out reports, the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, the Mind Trust, and the list goes on. And so in much of the mainstream media, there's a lot of press around the fact that this is a model to be replicated. And I can't say strongly enough that those kinds of representations of the New Orleans model are grossly inaccurate, that in fact this is a model to be avoided. I mean, one of the things I'd point out to listeners, Kathleen, is that you heard Dr. Sanders mention Act 35, right? Mm-hmm. Which is sort of what enabled the state to take over New Orleans public schools. So let me say something about that quickly, because people may be hearing various claims around the successes of New Orleans charter schools, but I want to put those in context. So what Act 35 did, basically, is that when Katrina hit, there was a school performance scale by which schools were rated as successful or failing. And it was a 200-point scale. And at the time, the cut point for failure was a school that performed at 60 on a scale of 200. By that definition, the majority of schools in New Orleans were not failing. What Act 35 did 2 months after Katrina is basically to shift upward the cut point of failure to 87.4, which was just below the state average. Now, by that new definition of failure, the majority of schools in New Orleans were now quote-unquote failing, which gave the state the impetus to take them over and then basically hand them out for operation to private charter school operators. Now, what's key about what I'm saying is that on one hand, a standard of 60 out of a scale of 200 was the original standard for judging schools, right? That was ratcheted up. The schools were taken over, and they were chartered. What many people do not know is that subsequent to the schools being taken over, the state legislature in Louisiana then ratcheted the cut point score back down again.
Oh.
Okay? And at this point, they ratcheted back down to 60 on a scale of 200. It went up slightly after that. And then currently, they shifted the scale to 150-point scale, and it's currently 50 on a 150-point scale that defines failure. And they've added in some kind of mysterious formula that can give school bonus points for various things. And so the key point to understand here is when you hear about claims about, you know, in the school charter schools being on an upward trajectory or having improved student achievement, what listeners need to understand is that it's basically an apples to oranges comparison, in that the traditional public schools in New Orleans in 2005 were judged by one standard, right?
Mm-hmm.
87.4. The charter schools in New Orleans subsequently have been judged by a much lower standard. And so, again, if you want to compare achievement, you have to use the same standard, and clearly they are not using the same standard. Secondly, on the ends of the students, we've mentioned all of these exclusionary practices, right, whereby charter schools are cream skimming, if you will. That's another issue in terms of you know, claiming achievement. You know, again, New Orleans public schools, granted, imperfectly, but nonetheless served all comers. Charter schools in New Orleans do not serve all comers. So again, if you're cream skimming, you can also attempt to skew the numbers for your school upward. That said, what's interesting about this experiment being touted as a model and the reality being something very different is that even after all of these gymnastics, if you will, around altering the cut point in order to benefit charter schools, and in a sense to legislatively contrive success, right? Fact is this, and Dr. Sanders can attest to this, that only four RSD schools in 2014 were above the state average. On the LEAP test, which is the state standardized test in Louisiana in 2014, they tested the fourth and eighth grade levels, for example, in math, science, social studies, and language arts. New Orleans RST schools all ranked below the 25th percentile, with the exception of eighth grade math. In terms of the letter grade system in Louisiana, charter schools in New Orleans RST, they have never achieved an A school. The majority of schools are C, D, and F schools. In terms of advanced placement outcomes, they're second to Louisiana is second to last in the nation. ACT scores are a really interesting case because the state superintendent, John White, in Louisiana of Education, basically last year did not release the ACT scores for the New Orleans Recovery School District. And it wasn't until just recently that a veteran teacher and blogger acquired access to the scores and released them, which then prompted the state to release them a year late. It became very apparent why the state didn't want to release them. They were an embarrassment in terms of the New Orleans RSD performance. The composite score for New Orleans RSD schools was 15.7. I mean, to get into Louisiana State University, you need at least a 22.
Yes. Let me ask,
the statistics go on, basically,
right,
and it's not promising and certainly should not be replicated.
We have about 40 seconds left because you're so unhappy with this, and I assume some parents are. Professor Sanders, you first, in just a few moments, answer. Do you think that there will be a change?
Well, I think that the only change that we can look forward to is a change in the governor's office and a change in our leadership, you know, within the State Department of Education. Because other than that, this top-down, bureaucratic, inhumane system is going to be with us because, you know, it's a profit situation down here. So until that changes, we will, you know, the kids in New Orleans and the public schools will still be suffering.
Mm-hmm. Thank you both very much for being with us. Our thanks to Professor Renard Sanders and to Professor Chris Burris for being with us. They will be part of this panel. It's a community conversation about public education and how proposed legislative action could impact Milwaukee. It's coming up this Thursday and Friday. Thursday at the Milwaukee High School of the Arts at 4:30 in the afternoon. Also, Karen Harper Royal, the public school parent, who became very involved with her children's education, will be part of the panel as well, Friday, March 27 at 6 o'clock at Park Lawn Assembly of God. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing the hour, to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. And thanks for listening, everybody. Physician-assisted suicide is what we talk about hour two.